First, one of the closest comparisons we have to the new coronavirus is the 1918 influenza outbreak. That outbreak ultimately killed millions of people around the world and had a huge impact on the economy. While there are points of comparison with today, there were some big differences, too. For one, the U.S. government's ability to provide economic relief to the tune of trillions of dollars, like we're seeing today. That's something that our next guest recently took a closer look at, along with other differences in the economic impact of the 1918 flu and today's novel coronavirus. Tessa Conroy is a development specialist and assistant professor in UW-Madison's Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. She talked to WPR host Keely Boltina about her essay for WisContext on the topic.
Broadly, what can we say about the economic impact of the 1918 influenza around the globe?
The economic impact was certainly felt around the globe. I mean, some of the studies that I've been looking at recently suggest around a 6% decrease in GDP for the typical country due to this flu-related decline in economic activity.
And did we see kind of a similar response in the U.S., or was it different in some way?
The U.S. Certainly had declines. I mean, I've been thinking most about Wisconsin. And what was interesting for me is that, you know, based on comparisons, the decline in activity looked a lot like it does today, in that people were having to stay home, that a lot of our movie theaters, restaurants, bars were closed down. So certainly businesses were missing out on revenues. So that comparison is certainly interesting to me.
So we can draw some parallels between the 1918 flu and what's happening now with COVID-19. And some of those come from what some consider to be, you know, extreme public health measures, telling people you have to stay home. What does that comparison look like?
Right. Wisconsin was really interesting in that respect, in that we were the only state to issue a comprehensive statewide measure. So we were an early adopter of having a state board of health and built a network of local health boards as well. So by the time the 1918 flu happened, we had a pretty well-established public health infrastructure that we used to respond to the flu. So we were able to ask people to stay at home, keep places closed, keep people safe at a large scale. And interestingly, what we see is that definitely the 1918 pandemic resulted in economic losses. But some of the more recent work shows that the places that did intervene, that did kind of impose social distancing and these types of measures, their economies, once the pandemic was over, their economies performed at least as good as those that were less stringent.
Do we have any idea why that might have been the case?
I could speculate, you know, that maybe, you know, with people, fewer people sick, that people are able to go back to work sooner, perhaps more quickly restoring consumer confidence that the pandemic is under control. So perhaps some of those effects might help us understand those differences.
Now, not everything that we did with the 1918 pandemic actually does translate. You say that the comparison doesn't always hold up. But what are the ways that we shouldn't think of these two major public health situations as the same?
Right. So the differences are probably more interesting to me than the similarities in that. So, for example, I mean, the virus in 1918 was particularly severe for working age people. And today it seems that it's most severe for those that are probably out of the workforce. So in 1918, when people got sick, it's more likely that households lost a primary breadwinner. So that was one thing that was interesting. Today, too, we have a kind of widespread geographically dispersed production. So as one part of the world encounters the virus and addresses it, it's hard for that not to have ripple effects into the supply chain that affect other parts of the world. But I think the biggest differences that I noticed were really in policy, that before the 1930s, we didn't see monetary policy the way we see it today. We didn't see fiscal policy. The unemployment insurance program didn't take shape until the 1930s. And same with Social Security. And these are two programs that definitely, I imagine, could have helped ease the burden for families, over 100 years ago as they faced that pandemic.
And the Federal Reserve was also in its infancy then. So how has the government's ability to respond and provide economic relief really changed since?
We're seeing a much longer menu of policy options, both on the monetary side and the fiscal side. So already we've seen the Federal Reserve deploy several policies on the monetary side, including lower interest rates, kind of a suite of actions to stabilize markets. On the fiscal side, we're seeing really large spending initiatives, some of those aimed at businesses, some at households, and some government spending just to respond to the virus and get the CDC the resources and other institutions the resources that they need to respond. And we hadn't really seen, you know, this sort of large-scale spending before perhaps the New Deal.
And what is the strategy there? Help us understand why that spending might make a difference now in a way it couldn't in 1918.
So these policies are aimed at kind of different parts of the economy, but mainly in increasing spending. So when the Federal Reserve lowers interest rates, this is meant to lower the cost of debt for big purchases like houses and cars. So hopefully encourage consumers to go spending. Some of these measures to restore stability in the markets is meant to increase confidence, make sure that we have the liquidity that we need so that everybody can meet their debt obligations for households, again, restoring consumer confidence, making sure that they can pay their bills in the short term, but also hoping that, you know, down the road, we feel confident about purchasing concert tickets and things like that as well. So a number of measures to get kind of spending back where it was and help families and businesses get through. The loan programs for businesses in particular, expect another bill coming through. So these are all meant to kind of help people meet their current needs and get some money flowing again in the economy.
Tessa Conroy is an assistant professor in UW-Madison's Department of Agriculture and Applied Economics, and we're talking about her writing for Wiscontext about the 1918 flu, what we can learn and what we can't quite learn when we compare what's happening right now with COVID-19 to what happened back then. And Tessa, you say there are some economic impacts we saw in 1918 that were short-lived and some were longer-lasting. What do we see in each of those categories?
So definitely some short-term and immediate losses, large-scale declines in manufacturing, for example. But then we also saw wage increases. So as people fell ill or sadly didn't make it through the virus, we saw a labor shortage. So those people that were available, perhaps having to put in a little extra time or work a little extra harder at their jobs. So we saw some wage increases, and we also saw some state-level income growth associated with the pandemic, but relatively short-lived on that front. On some of the longer-term impacts, there's some evidence that people who were born in the wake of the 1918 pandemic went on to achieve poorer education and economic outcomes later in life. So a mix of outcomes to consider based on the 1918 experience.
And what is it about our response now when we're trying to pull in information about what's changed and what's the same? Why is this such a complicated scenario now, even compared to 1918?
Right. So the COVID-19 crisis definitely is unique in that. Oftentimes when we think about an economic downturn, we might think of kind of one trigger, a demand shock or perhaps a supply shock or a financial shock. With the COVID-19 crisis, we're looking at potential aspects of all three. So multiple aspects of the economy to be thinking about and juggle as we make policy.
And now that we kind of understand more about the different kinds of policy approaches that are happening now than in 1918, how do we figure out how to judge what's happening and figure out if this is helping or if we're not in favor of the policies of states and the federal government right now?
I think there will be a decades-long conversation of if we're doing it right, in the right amount, at the right time. But I think when we look at some of the policies right now, you know, unemployment insurance, we're definitely seeing claims balloon as we go through this. When we think about the small business loan programs and how quickly those have been utilized, certainly these policies are making an impact for households and businesses right now, right away. And it's hard to argue that those aren't important impacts to think about as we continue making our way through this crisis.
And as someone who works on economic development, what are you keeping your eye on as we move forward when we try to figure out the economic impact of this new coronavirus?
I'm definitely thinking about, you know, these programs and how long they can last, and if we're how long we're going to be in this sort of extreme dire straits. Hopefully, you know, we can find our way back to a more normal environment so that our businesses and our households, our workers can find some element of normalcy again, and, you know, can start to step away from needing these programs as badly as they are, and again, resume kind of normal market and labor market activity.
Tessa, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was UW-Madison's Tessa Conroy talking to WPR host Keely Boltina. You can learn more about the economic impact of the 1918 flu and how it compares to today's coronavirus outbreak in Tessa's piece at wiscontext.org.